Now, today is, you know, we're going to continue with the life of David and Jonathan. Jonathan was the son of the king and the right heir to the throne. And, you know, I don't know if you're a son of the king, all your life you're preparing yourself to become a king, right? I mean, that's what they do. It's just their fathers are very protective. They want to prepare their son in order to take the kingdom forward and so on. But what if the boy does not want the kingdom? What if the son just says, you know, there are more important things to do in life, and that is stay faithful to God? I mean, come on, I remember when I was going to go to seminary at the age of 14, I really knew what I was going to do. I was very, very clever student, apparently that's what people said. I was terrible in literature. I just hated reading. And this is just, you know, nothing about reading was great, but I just did not like reading. So my grades really suffered in English and all that. But I had such good grades in math and chemistry and physics. It came very naturally to me. So I was really good. So the school was troubled, you know, what to do with me, because I was a good student, but I was terrible in literature. And everybody said math and chemistry and all that was important. So they just, you know, there's a blind eye. It's all right. He's doing all right. And then, you know, to make a long story short, when I told my parents that I was not going to continue in the business of the family, but then go into ministry. Now, you have to understand, this was a very foreign idea. They thought I was just losing it or going through this teenage stuff. And we didn't even have Facebook or Twitter accounts back then. And they thought it was just a phase I was going through. But this phase became a reality, and I did not follow in the family tradition. And I did not become a businessman. I became a gospelman. And it's very interesting, because you use the skills of business in ministry as well, because what you're doing is you're selling the good news for free. And for my parents, were just, especially for my dad, he just thought I was just utterly throwing my future away. And I kind of did not understand everything, but kind of knew that I was so convinced that it was the right thing to do that it just did not bother me that much, because I saw the impossible was becoming possible. But you have to convince the church to believe in me. You know, my biggest challenge was the church. How can this kid even go to ministry? His father is not a minister. His uncle is not a minister. I mean, he grew up in an Eastern tradition. How can he even serve in a Protestant denomination? I mean, it was fascinating. And now that I reflect back, God was using every step of the way for me to give up something in order to do what was right. Now, the story of Jonathan is a clear story that tells you where his priorities are. His father is a king, but he is throwing his right to the kingdom in order to stay faithful to his friend and in order to stay faithful to his God. You know, there are a lot of types of friendship. Do you have friends? I hope you do. I have many friends. I consider you all friends, and I'm very, very blessed. But there are certain types of friendship that the world has that I would call people in the world friends, but it goes to a certain level. For the Christian, to have a Christian friendship with somebody else, it goes to a whole different place. I think the secular world does not understand it. And sometimes even as Christians, we kind of struggle with this. A true friend, a true Christian friend, you will never have a better friend than a friend who points you to Christ. That's what a Christian friend does. Because their ultimate priority, if they have you to come to faith, that's the greatest treasure they can give to you. And I think somehow in our society, even in our churches, we've lost this. That the greatest, the most important role that we need to play is to not only hold each other accountable, but also help each other to come even closer to Christ. True friends aren't the ones who make your problems disappear. They are the ones who won't disappear when you're facing problems. You know, a lot of people are your friends until there's a problem. People don't like confrontation. Do you want to test your friends? See how they will act and react especially when you're in the midst of it. A lot of people will call themselves, and your friends, they love you until there's a problem, then they will distance themselves because they have personal gains in it. And unfortunately, a lot of friendships in this world are based on what do I get out of it. Christian friendship, it's all about giving and not getting anything back. You know how many people get disappointed? They say, well, I've done this, and look how they treated me. Have you ever had people like this in your life? All the time. But I've learned to say, it's okay. You know, I wasn't doing it for them. I was doing it because the Lord has called me to do this. It hurts because you truly invest yourself in these things. And then just because you were hurt, I'm not going to stop doing it to somebody else. It's very, very important not to give up just because you had one or two or three or four people after you invested so much in their lives that they just did not appreciate it, or they just, you know, they were just terrible to you, that you will hold that back from the fifth or the sixth or the seventh. We need to continue blessing people until the end, because that's our job as Christians. But Christian friendship, I believe it's very unique, and it's based on the Lord's foundation. And I've got a few of these in my life, and I'm the richest person in the world when it comes to Christian friendship, because it does something to you. You feel you're not alone. You know, there's a terrible sickness in our society, and it's being alone. You know, like it's spreading like disease. And people are just doing crazy things in order to be part of a community, but it's a fake community. You know, the whole social media thing has created this fake community that you don't need even to feel in touch or embrace anybody. You could be their friend, or you could defriend them. At any point in time, the press of a button from your home, boom, they're gone. You know how many friends requests I get on my Facebook? Half of them, I've got no clue who they are. They want to be my friends, but you know what? It feels great. Oh, they want to be my friend. Who are they? I always say, delete. I don't know. They could be like really crazy people as well. They've got a great profile. Delete. I don't know this person. But there are certain people that I know. And then I would say, I really don't know them that well. I've met them once. Why do they want to be my friend? Too nosy. They want to know everything about you, right? So you just say, you don't respond. But it's interesting, this Facebook or the social media has created fake friendships within our society where people get hurt about nothing. You see? So we need to be very careful as we are moving in society. People are becoming lonelier by the day. Even I see this within marriages. You know, I see this within families, that they live in one unit, but they are so living separately. It is happening. Now, the story of Jonathan and David, to me, it's such an important lesson about what true friendship does to the other. I mean, what Jonathan did, he had to go against his father to stay faithful to his Christian friend. Didn't Jesus say in the New Testament, you know, there will come a time where you will hate your mother, hate your father, hate your sister, hate you for my sake? I mean, we don't take this, but he's going to an extreme and saying, following me comes at a cost. And many of us do not want to pay that cost. Now here, in our story, in chapter 20, you've got a mad king. He's utterly crazy and mad simply because he's jealous of David. David has done nothing wrong to him. Nothing. He has wronged him. He's been actually nice to him. He's won battles for him. Has it ever been in your life where you've really been nice to somebody and they've worked against you all the time? And it feels crazy, doesn't it? It not only hurts you, but it's just you feel disgusted by the situation and you want answers. So I want you to feel that this is all happening in this story. You've got Jonathan, who's a good friend of David. He is older than David, but they've got this such a strong bond that's based on the Lord. And then you've got Jonathan's father, who's really obsessed by his kingdom, even though God says, I'm going to take your kingdom away and give it to somebody else. But then Saul is fighting against God. And then because he wants his son to inherit the kingdom. So this is what happens. He still wants to kill David. Now, if somebody's trying to kill you, you run away, you never come back, right? Now, if your life is in danger by someone, you don't want to be near them. Now, in the case of David, David keeps going and running, keeps going back to Saul, who was, you know, last week we saw, he took the spear and he was ready to kill the guy. But now he runs away, Saul goes after him, but then God protects him. Now, he is with Samuel at a place called Naioth. Now he goes back to where Saul is because he wants to find an answer why Saul is trying to kill him. And this is what happens. David now fled from Naioth in Ramah and found Jonathan. So basically he went back to where the trouble was. Usually people run away from trouble, but he's going back where the trouble is because he wants to find answers. And when he finds Jonathan, he says, "What have I done?" he exclaimed. "What is my crime? How have I offended your father that he is so determined to kill me?" I mean, we know this from the story, but this is what Jonathan says. "That's not true. That's not true," he says. Jonathan protested. "You're not going to die. He always tells me everything he's going to do, even the little things. I know my father wouldn't hide something like this from me. It's just not so." I mean, Jonathan, he's got such a pure faith in his father. I mean, he's close to his dad. And he says, "Look, if there was something like this, he would tell me." But then remember, just a chapter before, he told Jonathan to go and kill David. But Jonathan changed his father's mind by saying, "Look, he's innocent. You're going to sin against the Lord. You cannot do this." And the father says, "I promise I'm not going to do any harm." Now, you know what? I never, this is something that I've developed over years. I never believe a person who abuses others. I don't take their word as the gospel. Once an abuser, always an abuser, unless the Lord really changes them. And when somebody abuses you, as I said last week, you run away. You don't pray about it. You don't come to Pastor Bears' prayer meeting on Wednesday night and say, "We're going to pray for this." You just run away. And here, David runs away, but he comes back because he wants Jonathan, the son of the king, to really understand what's happening. So Jonathan is innocent here. He just doesn't think about that anything is going wrong. Then David took an oath before Jonathan and said, "Your father knows perfectly well about our friendship. So he has said to himself, I won't tell Jonathan. Why should I hurt him? But I swear to you that I'm only a step away from death. I swear to it by the Lord and my own soul." He's telling to Jonathan, "Look, your father is going to kill me. I want you to understand this." And then he says, this is the funny thing he says. He says, "I'm only a step away from death." You know, as I was reading this, aren't we all a step away from death in life? We are. I mean, they're not like, "All right, I'm going on my fifth step now." It's just one step. Our lives are in the hands of the Lord. And what David is saying is that, "I know my enemy. He's ready to kill me. So therefore, I'm one step." I mean, at the end, we are really one step behind, you know, away from death. It could be in our hundreds, or when you're 102 or 100, whatever. I hope it happens a long, long time from now. But these people who went to Philippines today in church, cathedral, they went there and they did not know that they were one step away from their death before the service ended. Some 21 lives were taken. So we need to be very careful not to think that we are invincible, that we have it all under control. Our lives belong to the Lord, and we need to stay faithful to Him. Then David took an oath and he says, "Tell me," Jonathan turns to him, he says, "Tell me what I can do to help you." David replied, "Tomorrow we celebrate the new moon festival." And basically he goes there, "Look, tomorrow there's a meal. And the new moon festival is going to be celebrated every month." This was a minor holiday in the Jewish circle that before the moon came out, there was a little moon up there. So they celebrated it with a three-day feast. Maybe it was just a way of just to eat more, right? Maybe we could create all these things, you know, like, hey, what should we celebrate next week? We could make a tradition out of it, right? And during that time, the king sat, but all his commanders sat and ate with him. And it was a three-day feast. And he says, David says to Jonathan, "Look, tomorrow, I'm not going to show up. And if your father tells you where you are, where I am, tell him that I'm in Bethlehem." Now, David is trying to lie here, right? Now, what you need to understand is just because he told a lie to Jonathan to tell his father, it doesn't make it right. The author of the book is reporting the events as they took place. See, a lot of people have come over the years to me and they said, you know what, polygamy should be fine. And I say, why? Well, it's in the Bible, it's written. I say, you fool, Moses is reporting what's happening. Just because Abraham had a few wives, it doesn't mean God did not bless that, but it was just reported as it was. It created more problems for him. Many, many problems. And people take these things out of context and they try to create a doctrine out of it. You know how many people have come to me and said over the years, well, we need to do this because it's in the Bible. You know, unfortunately, they made Jonathan and David into homosexuals. Why? Because they embraced each other. They hugged each other. You know, as I said, I showed you, you know, last week and the week before, there's so many people hugging kiss all over the world. That's a normal way of expressing love. I know in the West it has become so, don't touch me, man. You know, or if you touch me, it just means something else. I mean, there's a pure love that's based on friendship here between Jonathan. So Jonathan is saying, what can I do to help you? And Jonathan said, and then David says, look, when you go there and you're having a meal, if your dad asks where I am and you tell him, if he gets mad, then you will know that he's after me to kill me. And it's interesting that that's exactly what happens. And then Jonathan goes and tells David, and he says, he's you know, flee from here. He's after your life. Now imagine, this is the son of the king. And remember, David is married to Saul's daughter. Both of his children are close friends to David. Yet this man wants to kill him. I mean, imagine your father-in-law wants to kill you. Where do you go from there? You go to your wife and complain? It's not going to help. He still want to kill you? I mean, he's the king. I mean, last week we saw in chapter 19, he basically tells his soldiers, go and arrest David from his own home, from his own bed. David is the wife is the one who just saves David from that trouble. And she lies to her father. Do you see one sin causes more sins in life? You know, has it ever happened to you? Like you were trying to just cover up something with a lie, then you had to tell more lies to cover that lie, and eventually you had no clue what the lie was all about and what the problem was all about. Sin invites more sin. Sometimes, you know, it's better just to do what you need to do that is right, and you save yourself a lot of problems down the line. So this is what happens afterwards. So David, then they make a covenant with one another. And one of the things that Jonathan says to David, he says, God is going to punish all your enemies. Now he's talking about his father. God is going to punish all your enemies. But he says, remember me in kindness, Jonathan says. And remember my descendants in kindness. And David makes an oath with him. And later on in chapter 21 or 22, we're going to see when Jonathan dies, he's got a crippled son that David keeps his promise to his friend. And he takes care of that crippled son of his. And that crippled son, Jehoshaphat, is going to eat at the king's table because of that Christian friendship. He could have easily killed him. He's the grandson of Saul, the true heir to the throne. But see, this is what Christian friendship does, because it's based on a covenant. It has the Lord in the picture. Now, where do we go from here? This is where we go. Who are your friends today? Maybe sometimes you have to defriend some. Have you ever thought about defriending some friends who are a bad influence upon your life, but you are just there because family ties, and you have to do this, or business ties, but they've got such a negative influence upon your life that you really have to distance yourself? That's hard to do because it comes at a cost, right? And not many people are willing to do that. Number two, the question that you need to ask is how much time and energy you and I invest in our friends' life if we truly love them and respect them. Don't we want them to really follow the Lord? Do we do this? Because, you know, I said one of the marks of a true friend is that they lead the other to Christ. Sometimes it's going to be very disappointing. Sometimes we're going to have a lot of rejection. as I said, you know, faith does not solve all your problems, but it will just change the way you are going to look at your problems. And then finally, are you truly convinced that you've been put here on earth for a reason and a purpose? Do you truly believe that? I mean, sometimes people waste their time because they are thinking so much about this life here, and they are not preparing in the life thereafter. Do you know that you've been made for a purpose and a reason? Live up to your purpose and reason that God has for you. It could be something small, it could be something big. Do not copy somebody else. Jonathan's purpose in life was to protect his friend and give up his kingdom. True friendship is about giving and not expecting anything back. The only thing that Jonathan asked from his friend, be kind to my family, to my descendants. That was not much to ask. He could have asked, look, let's just partner together and then we will reign together. Or he could have turned and killed David because he was too interested in the throne, power. See, true friends lay their lives for their friends. Didn't Jesus say that? A true friend lays down his life for the other? So you could see Christ's teachings are applied in the life of Jonathan and David. My friends, it's a treasure. As the book of Proverbs says, you know, true friends are closer than brothers and sisters, let me add, sometimes. So if you have a treasure like that in your life and you're just neglecting it because you don't have time, invest your time in such treasures. Invest your time to grow in such friendships, because you're not going to outlast this life. Not only here, but you're going to continue this friendship in the life thereafter. Isn't that beautiful? I mean, a lot of my, you know, I used to have a lot of friends at school. They used to make fun of me because I was a Christian. They thought, you're just so close-minded. You're going to go to ministry. You could do so much. Yeah, you know. I look at their lives now. They lead so many of them. Some of them are doing very well. But many of them lead such sad lives that my heart breaks. There's, you know, anyway, I'm not going to go through it. Just because they chose that, you know, that Christian life is a boring life. But they never understood Christianity. They understood it through religious eyes. Jonathan, I love Jonathan. He truly understood what it means to give up for the love of the other. So my friends, if you read Jonathan and David's life, it's not just about friendship, it's about applying 1 Corinthians chapter 13, love. You know, I love that 1 Corinthians, they always read it at weddings for some reason. You know how many times I've been asked to read 1 Corinthians 13 to people who just have no faith? I've done weddings outside the church where I was asked, oh, Pastor, can you read 1 Corinthians 13? I always say, why? Oh, it's such a lovely, lovely, lovely verse. And I say, yeah, it is lovely, but it's not written for a wedding. Did you know that the other thing is just drives me crazy? Psalm 23, they always read it at funerals or at somebody's bedside, at the hospital. I mean, it's not wrong, don't get me wrong, but why would you just read it? It was not written for funerals. David nowhere said, well, I'm going to write a psalm for funerals. We just loved it, and it became, the Lord is my shepherd. But the Lord is my shepherd every day. I could say that psalm every day, even when I'm rejoicing. You know, when I go, you know, I'm just, sometimes you feel like crazy, that you want to dance, right? Does it ever happen to you? It's a good thing. I'm talking without medication, of course. Just, you feel great, and you say, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not be in want. It's all right, yes. I can just walk through the valley of the shadow of death. I will fear no evil. Don't just read this psalm in gloomy days. The Lord is my shepherd. Rejoice in it. He is your shepherd. In good times, in bad times, and in ugly times. And then the 1 Corinthians. The Apostle Paul says, whenever you have a wedding, please do read this. 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Love is faith. Everybody loves about you. They have no clue what they're reading. You know, when it comes to love, this is agape love. This is not, eros love. This is not filial love. This is not, it was a storge love. I speak Greek now, see? This is agape love. The Greek fathers had to come up with a word to describe the pure love that God has. And we are to imitate it. In the church, not at a wedding. But because it's so powerful, people are absorbed to it. This is what it says. If I could, this is the Apostle Paul, is talking to a very troubled church. They struggled with sexual immorality. They struggled with, people were taking each other to court. People were, it was a crazy church. And he's writing to the church and he's saying, look, if I could speak all the languages of the earth and of angels. Did you know that angels have a language? I don't know, but what it is. But it's angelic. If I could speak all the languages of the earth and of angels, but do not love others, I would only be a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If I had the gift of prophecy, and if I understood all of God's secret plans and possessed all knowledge, and if I had such faith that I could move mountains, but did not love others, I would be nothing. If I give everything I have to the poor and even sacrifice my body, I could boast about it, but I didn't love others, I would have gained nothing. And this is the part that they really love. Love, agape love, is patient and kind. Love is not jealous or boastful or proud or rude. It does not demand its own way. It's not irritable and it keeps no record of being wronged. It does not rejoice about injustice, but rejoices whenever the truth wins out. Love never gives up. Love never loses faith. It's always hopeful and endures through every circumstance. Don't you see that in Jonathan's life? That's the first thing that comes to my mind. Jonathan understood 1 Corinthians 13 before even it was written. And I think as Christians, if we attempt to apply some of these things, you know what the problem is being hurt? How to deal with hurt? Creates bitterness. It does. And I say it's okay for some time, because if you're not hurtful, being hurt and getting bitter, then you're not a human. You're a robot. But you have to do something about it, because it will kill you. You just have to let it go. And let God. Jonathan had to let go his father. He still loved him. He still cared for him. But he stayed faithful to his mighty God. And David was saved. And he became the king. God's anointed. A man after God's own heart. He was not perfect, but a man after God's own heart. Oh, how much we need this amongst friends. That if he or she is a man or a woman after God's own heart, you are in safe hands. Because ultimately, they have to answer to the Lord before they answer to you. And because they want to answer to the Lord, they have to answer to the Lord. They have to really do something about you. Love you beyond understanding. I am blessed with friends like this in my life. I truly am. And I know you are. But you have to invest time and energy in such relationships. And may the Lord always be at the core of everything you do. Because when you move him, you know, there's a proverb, that verse is coming to mind. Two are better than one.
Right.
But there's another verse that says, three cords are hard to break. You know, when we were engaged, my wife gave me a ring. I have it. I should wear it. You know, it's a three-cord ring. And I asked her, what the heck is this? You know, I've never seen this. You know, it looked very magical. He says, one ring is for you, one ring is for me, and one ring is the Lord that binds us together. And that's from Proverbs, though, right? But that's what true friendship is in the Lord, that the Lord is always at the core of it. That with all the storms of life, faith in the Lord is going to bind you together, because you've got that God element in it. And Jonathan and David had, and they made a covenant in the presence of God to each other. We shall continue. Amen.